Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome to the KE Report weekend show. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend show. On this weekend show, we are going to be starting off with more a roundabout look at the financial markets, looking at what's going on in the U.S. broad averages. Also talk about money that seems to continue to move into international markets and touch on some of the commodities. Back end of the show, we're going to focus even more on the energy sector because those sectors have been under a lot of pressure, especially crude, trying to figure out where a bottom is. Just as a note, please, everyone, go back through our website, podcast, YouTube channel, and Substack account for all our daily editorials and company updates throughout the week to stay more on top of daily market moves as well as key company updates. Without further ado, let's get into this show, starting off with Dana Lyons, fund manager and editor of the Lionshare Pro website. Dana, let's start with broad market recap here. We have seen the markets rebound after an absolute washout near the beginning of April, after Liberation Day. The markets have managed to get a little bit of footing. The S&P from its low has rebounded about 16%. Still a little ways away from all-time highs, and I know still a lot of negativity or at least trepidation within a lot of the investors and commentators we talk to on a daily basis about the stability of these markets. Dana, your outlook. What do you think about this rebound that we have seen in the broad averages in the U.S.?
Yeah, thanks, Corey. Well, I think as we've discussed in the last show and in prior shows, I think this rebound is more of a reflexive kind of a B wave higher off of that initial correction low, that washout that we saw in early April. Again, corrections tend to follow a similar pattern or what we call a roadmap. You get the initial sell off into that panic low, like we saw in early April. You get that reflexive bounce up into some manner of resistance. Prices get tired. Those people have covered, right? Had to cover shorts, fueled that reflexive rebound higher. They've covered their shorts. And then you have a number of people that still want to sell this thing that didn't sell it the first time. And so selling pressure comes in again, and you get what they call the retest of those correction lows. So I think we're very close to that point now, that top of that V wave. And we should see that C wave lower commence pretty soon. I think whether it's, you know, now or a few days or whatever it is, I think the risk reward ratio or relationship is substantially skewed to the downside right now. So we've been selling pretty aggressively over the last few days, getting set for or fending ourselves against, or like I said, what should be potential retest or maybe new lows, maybe not new lows, depends on the average, but should see some sort of a C wave lower coming up soon.
Well, Dana, just in thinking about the C wave lower, you were making a point to us off mic that, you know, when you have this ABC pattern, A down, B up, C down, and then you start finding your footing at that bottom, there's certain sectors that are holding up better and showing more relative strength compared to other sectors. And you would anticipate those sectors to be the ones you want to be positioned in for the eventual, you know, upcycle and the series of waves up. So when you look across the different market sectors, which ones stand out to you as ones that are holding up better and that even though we may still see some downside pressure would be the ones you'd want to start accumulating at that C bottom?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a good call. Now's when you start getting clues. Well, there's two junctures. Okay, in this B wave higher, those markets that are able to blast through perceived resistance and approach the prior highs are those areas that are set up for potential future relative strength. So those are on your radar. And then again, in that C wave lower, the retest, you want to see which areas hold up the best, hold up above the prior lows by the biggest margin, holding areas of support, holding near those former highs. That's what you want to see in terms of trying to glean what's going to be intermediate term relative strength going forward. And what we see now is a lot of the international markets have actually rallied back or to the former all-time highs or the prior peaks that we saw earlier in the year, especially in Europe. So you've seen broad averages internationally. Have you seen averages in Europe, even Canada approaching those former highs? So I would say those markets have retraced the most of the correction losses that they saw. So that's a good sign, a good heads up about potential leadership going forward. You're also seeing among some of the U.S. sectors, some of the defensive names or value names like utilities hanging up near the former highs, aerospace defense sitting up near their former highs. Some of the areas within financials have held up relatively well. So those are some of the names that have recovered the best or held up the best. Right now, we want to see them maintain that kind of solid constructive technical position on any sell-off, any retest coming up. And those would be good clues that those are some areas that you want to be in going forward.
This shift of money really seems to be a theme I'm hearing a lot of over the last couple months now, into more value out of growth and even more international out of the US. And these sort of shifts, they happen from time to time. I understand that we've seen this plenty of times, but there's just so many comments that I've been hearing that this could be a longer term shift, that maybe the way other countries are viewing the US is that they're not going to be giving the US equity markets that multiple that they have in the past. I know making these long-term proclamations can be very difficult, but Dana, what sort of things do you look for on the charts in your models that can indicate when we are seeing a longer-term secular shift in where money is flowing, especially when it is out of growth, which had been such a leader for so long?
Yeah, for sure. And you get fits and starts. There's always money rotating. So whether it's a short term, medium term, or longer term shift, it's hard to know at the time. But just one easy type of clue is just look for those big seismic events on the charts, the big blow off tops, the big washout bottoms. Yeah, I think about, similar to recent price patterns. You look at the dot-com bubble back in 2000, which was an obvious just blow off and signals a shift out of those types of stocks and into value or other types of stocks. We saw that, I think, really over the past 6, 8 months here in the US, looking at the semiconductor stocks, the Mag 7 stocks, just another, not to that extent, but say similar type of a blow-off move, and then kind of popping of the bubble. And those seismic type events are a good clue that, okay, maybe there is a longer term shift underway, because to get those types of bubbles, you have to have massive amounts of money flowing in and then massive amounts of money flowing out. And that's going to go somewhere. And in this case, I think, again, we have to continue to monitor this, but it looks to us like a long-awaited kind of longer-term shift to value from growth and potentially to international from the U.S. types of shift are certainly underway or potentially underway. Again, the international shift we've been waiting for, not waiting, other folks have been waiting for it for really, well over a decade now, and it just hasn't happened. Seeing certainly signs of that, like I mentioned, the international stocks really outperforming this year, and especially in this recovery, they're back up near their former highs. So maybe that's a longer term shift towards international. I don't know yet, but certainly in the intermediate term, that would be a good place to start in terms of looking for that international leadership.
Well, Danny, when you think about the lay of the land, and if we do have in the near future another leg down and a corrective leg, a lot of people have been trained for the last let's just call it 15, 16 years, to always buy every dip in the general markets, thinking that markets can only go up, not realizing that there's two directions they can go. And so they've been buying the dip, and they've been piling into tech in particular as the tech leadership, like you were alluding to, the Mag 7, but even into the AI and the semiconductor stocks recently. What happens when leadership actually changes? I know that money rotates and people change, but there's going to be people that keep going back to the well. And how would you advise people that you talk to in your audience about not getting stuck into the same trap of assuming that the markets have to be like they were in the past moving forward?
Absolutely. And that's part of human nature and investment psychology that's so difficult to overcome is that you get stuck thinking, okay, this market going forward is going to be like the market that we recently knew, the recency bias. And when you get these seismic shifts, that's when investors are going to lose the most money. Again, going back to the dot-com bubble, because that's the most egregious example. I recall, after the bubble popped in the spring of 2000 and stocks really started really crashing from their bubble highs. I recall, and not just anecdotally, but, massive amounts of people quitting their jobs just to get into day trading because they saw the opportunity and buying these dips in the dot-com stocks that had for the prior few years had certainly every dip had paid off, and the wealthier that not they but probably their friends or someone they knew or someone family member, the wealthier they got, the more FOMO I think people got, and so they were waiting for the next opportunity to participate themselves, and it turned into years of, oh, you better be selling the rips instead of buying the dips in these things because they're just massively overowned and had a couple of years of distribution to get through before they even bought them. So that's the danger in the in terms of these longer term market shifts is that people get stuck thinking they're in the same type of market. And to add insult to injury, it's not just that they're sitting there with the same positions that are going down and getting hurt, but they're buying, like you said, they're buying on the way down constantly and adding to their losses, and those things keep going down once the top is in. So that's the real danger, and that's the devastation that happens to investors that get stuck thinking you're in the same market.
Okay, we talk so much about this shift that could be happening, and I see many reasons for that shift to happen. But Dana, if we could step back a little bit from just your models, and I know you don't usually do this, nor do you like doing this, but let's face it, the sentiment around the US is as negative as I have ever seen it in my life. Countries, individuals are viewing the US very negatively. People aren't traveling to the US as much. Economic outlooks around the world, but especially in the US, have become quite negative. Earnings calls out of the US, some companies aren't even providing guidance because they don't know what sort of landscape they're going to face in the coming months, let alone in the coming weeks. How do we take this all and take a step back and understand that markets do change, but there's so much news right now, and the sentiment has swung so negatively towards the US, something that we haven't seen in decades. I don't know the last time we've seen this. How do we have to consider, again, the barrage of negativity we're getting about the US markets and filter that into some of our decision making when it comes to investing?
Yeah, good question. A couple things. First, you're right. I don't like to go outside of our models because they're quantitative and objective and smarter than I would be trying to parse out this, news headlines and whatnot. And they got us out of or defensive in the market back in mid-December when everything, looking at the charts, looking, listen to sentiment, everything was seemingly rosy, and yet there's breakdowns going under the surface. So that's why we listen to our models. But your point is well taken regarding sentiment. I think you got to use sentiment to your advantage, and the way we do that is typically just by fading it. But it has to be at extremes. It's hard to say, okay, sentiment is kind of bullish or kind of bearish, and try to glean a signal out of that, because sentiment usually isn't very helpful unless it's at an extreme. And as far as country-based sentiment or news-based sentiment, it's hard for me unless I see an actual measurable or data. It's hard for me to make a judgment on that. But as you mentioned, the anti-U.S. sentiment, in my view, I think it's a product of the media maybe right now, and the political statement I do seem to recall about 20 years ago being in the same type of the U.S.'s toast type of sentiment, or maybe during the financial crisis. To me, I would tend to fade that. Even if I can't find a signal there, I would tend to fade those types of concerns. But at the end of the day, if I'm going to use sentiment, it's going to be at an extreme, like we saw in the washout in early April. I'm going to see measurable sentiment that reached historic levels of fear, and I'm going to jump in and fade that and start buying. But that. At the end of the day, when it comes to investment decisions outside of sentiment, we're going to stick to the models and let that kind of be our guide, and leave the headline reading, headline investing to other investors.
Fair enough, Dana. And another market we could say got to an extreme level for multiple reasons, but it was the gold market and that uncertainty in the sell the US or, just not sure where to go to rotate money. A lot of people went to the safe haven of gold. That's kind of its role as like an insurance policy in people's portfolio. Now, there's been a lot of central bank buying. There's a lot of reasons. I know you scrub all that and put it aside and look at the models. We've seen a pullback in gold now over the last couple of weeks. What do your models say about the gold price? And then maybe bring into that also the gold equities.
Yeah, well, in terms of our investment selection, we're relative strength traders or investors, and we're going to follow the trend, and gold certainly is still, among the better relative strength leaders. So we're going to stick with that for now, despite a little bit of a hiccup over the last couple of weeks. That's not enough to register on our models, to be honest. So we'll stick with our trend, and stick with our positions in gold. I would say, when you talk about sentiment, one area maybe it is getting overheated, because it's hard to find anything negative about gold after, many, many years of that's all you would hear. But we've had such a substantial move that certainly I wouldn't be chasing it higher. I'd wait for some sort of a decent pullback, and if the trend ends up getting broken to the downside, then I pull the plug. But I would say, as an ETF trader, we hold positions in GLD as well as the gold miners. I would say if we get a shot around 286 on GLD, we would certainly step in and aggressively buy some more back there. But at the same time, on the upside, if we get up towards 3.25, 325 or so, we'll probably trim a little bit. So I got to stay objective. Nothing. As great as the narrative seem, nothing is a buy and hold. Nothing is a short and hold. You got to keep reminding yourselves that. And especially when it comes to commodities, which are, price constrained more than potentially equity, and as a single equity, which certainly can move more indefinitely than maybe a commodity. But a long story short, we'll stick with the GLD on gold as long as the trend is higher, and now look for areas on pullbacks to add to that position.
Okay, that 286 level, only about 3.5% down from here, so not that much further after gold has corrected. Let's just round it off to about 7%. Well, what about GDX then, the gold miners ETF? That was outperforming gold to the upside, and it is marginally outperforming to the downside. That's down about 11% from its recent highs. What are the levels you're looking for in GDX?
Yeah, we saw for, I guess, going back over a decade, the highs in GDX around that 45, 46 level. So that's where the breakout occurred. We had a little bit of a follow through after that, but I don't like chasing breakouts anymore. If we get a chance, though, down to buy GDX down around 46 or a little bit below, we would certainly jump on that. That would look like a phenomenal place to add to that position. And as far as GDXJ, the junior gold miners, We ran right up into those highs from 2020, the COVID highs, up around 66, 65, 66, and pulled right back from there. So again, you don't want to be chasing these things into moves that are up on a rope. Wait for a pullback, and GDXJ around that breakout point in the 57 range. I'd love to get a shot at buying some more of that there.
Well, Dane, another commodity that a lot of folks listen to the show follow is oil. You had a really good call. I'll give you a hat tip to short oil. And boy, that's paid off because oil has crashed below 60 now. It's in the mid 58s at the time of this recording. What do you make of where oil's priced now? Is there further downside in your opinion, or are you keeping your shorts in place?
Yeah, we did appreciate that. We did have a short on crude before the breakdown looked vulnerable to us. It did break down below that, I guess it was about a 3-year range and had some nice follow through. Covered a little bit. It rallied back up to that breakdown point the other day and failed immediately, which if you're short, that's exactly what you want to see at this point. I think there's about 10% more downside. If we do get that extra 10%, I'd be looking to cover all or almost all of the rest of the shorts there. That's all I was looking for. That was about maybe 20 to 25% short on the downside after that break of support.
Is there more damage to be done here? Because it has broken to what, 4-year lows. Is this a change in tenor for this market that had been pretty strong?
Yeah, I don't know. This was purely a technical trade for us, so I don't know what about the underlying factors of, really impacting the price of oil, all the geopolitical factors. I'm not about to weigh in on that, but this was just merely a technical trade. So again, about 10% below current prices is about what we were looking for as a target. So we'd be happy with that. We'd be happy covering our short at that point.
What are your thoughts just in a general sense on when a asset class is in a trading range like oil has been, and then it finally breaks out of it, either to the upside or the downside, and establishes a new range? Is that where it gets stuck for a long period of time? And we could bring the US dollar into the equation here because it's also been in a range testing the lower side of it. But is there any knowledge or insights you have after looking into markets, how they behave when they finally break out of that long range? Does it just set up another range, or can it set up a cascade move?
Yeah, it really depends really on the pattern, how long it's been in that pattern, what type of a pattern that it's been in while it's been range bound. If it's been basically bottom to the top of the range several times and then you break out, then usually that leads to maybe another setting up a new range to the upside, or in this case, the downside. Whereas if you're looking at a breakdown, it's been a long series of proximate lows and then lower highs, like a descending triangle, and you do break that lower bound, then you're looking at the potential for more of a cascade, more of an extreme sell-off, more downside potential there. But I would say, obviously, the longer you've been in a trading range, the more times that certainly that's been tested. Once you do break, obviously, that's a powerful move, considering that, if you look at the price of crude for the last 4 years or so, we were not able to break that level. Once you are able to break that level, that's a powerful signal that, okay, maybe you've cleared out a lot of that support, that buying power, and does open up serious potential to the downside, which is what made that short to us so attractive.
So, Dana, as a technical trader, as one who focuses on your models and one who is willing to make trades quite regularly, you must be loving this volatility because a lot of these markets, they are moving multiple percentage points a day and not just in the same direction. It is choppy, and the overall long-term trends, a lot of those are really in question. So, can you give us a time in history when we have seen this sort of volatility and how it impacts your trading strategies and even more importantly, your time in certain positions?
Yeah, volatility to us creates opportunity. And you look at just the correction, especially the downside. Volatility creates opportunity, especially when you're discussing a correction, which follows the same type of a roadmap like we talked about before, a very consistent roadmap. So that provides opportunity for us. But at the end of the day, whatever data matters, we've put together models that tries to incorporate a lot of internals, a lot of breadth, a lot of money flow type of indicators. And at the end of the day, anything that is useful or anything that is meaningful in the markets, as far as the price movement of the markets, we've tried to incorporate into our model. So if there is, whatever's causing the volatility, it should feed into the models. And if it's just volatility and our models hold up, then we can ignore it. If, like I mentioned back in December, on the other hand, we saw a very calm markets up, averages up near the all-time highs, and yet below the surface, we're seeing a deterioration. So that's why we like to stick to the models. They can see things below the surface that maybe we're not seeing with our eyes in terms of price movement. And at the same time, it can filter out a lot of the noise that, okay, maybe gets headlines, maybe instills a lot of fear or greed, but at the end of the day, maybe it's not that meaningful for the longer term trend. So we like to stick to that intermediate to longer term trend and really focus on the data that matters. That's why focusing on data as opposed to, kind of trying to subjectively come up with a narrative or investment thesis is to direct your investment is really, I think the number one most important thing that an investor can come up with. And because we talked a lot about sentiment and human nature earlier, we fight the same thing. Professionals fight the same thing. We're subjected to human nature as well. And the more you have something that you can hold on to that's consistent and unbiased, that makes all the difference in the world, I think.
Yeah, Dan, it's great having you on the show. And you are so right. We talk to a lot of people on this show, and there's a lot of people out there that, quite frankly, have a narrative in their head and then construct that narrative into their trading strategies and how they read different data points and how they read the charts. You're always a breath of fresh air, just telling us what your models are telling you. And again, not biased towards any certain sector, which is why you can trade all these markets and have these targets up and down for a lot of different sectors. I take what you have to say with a lot of credence, and I pay a lot of attention to when we have you on the show and hearing, especially when certain positions change for you. So, Dana, really appreciate all the time you spent with us, especially on this weekend show, making sense of all this volatility and choppy trading action. If you want to keep following along with Dana, visit the Lion Share Pro website. I will include that in the show notes on our website, YouTube page, and through Substack. Be sure to click that link and follow along with Dana if you want to be that active trader and stay on top of changes that his models are showing him. So, Dana, great chatting with you. Thank you again for your time on this weekend show.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
Al Corlin's firm, AB Corlin and Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.